Good morning, Shelbyville Church, and the residents of Shelbyville, those listening on the radio. In 2 Timothy 4, Paul says, I charge you therefore before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who will judge the living and the dead at his appearing and his kingdom. Preach the word, be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and teaching, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers, and they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. But you be watchful in all things. Endure affliction, do the work of evangelists, fulfill your ministry. And then in Acts of the Apostle, page 503, it says, this solemn charge is one so zealous and faithful as was Timothy in a strong testimony to the importance and responsibility of the work of the gospel minister. Summoning Timothy before the bar of God, Paul bids him preach the word, not the sayings and customs of men, to be ready to witness for God whenever opportunity should present itself. And that's kind of what the message is about today. I titled it Lessons from the Church at Smyrna. You know, oftentimes we face situations in life that challenge our faith in God. We or our family members face injustice. Have any of you ever faced injustice? We experience health problems. Does that ring a bell? Our non-believing family members may die suddenly. When we encounter such situations, we often wonder, does the Lord really love us? And how does the Lord feel about these types of situations? There are times when life goes bad for all of us. Is that true or not? It is, isn't it? The letter from Jesus to the church of Smyrna helps us to think biblically about life struggles, especially those struggles that come because of our Christian faith. The letter to the church at Smyrna tells us something about this church and much more about Jesus himself. Through these brief words, only four verses, we find a lot of encouragement for us in our struggles in life. First of all, Jesus says that he knows your troubles. Do you believe that? That's nice to know, isn't it? Sometimes we think we're all alone, or at least we feel all alone and that no one cares. But Jesus knows what you're going through, and he's right there with you through all of it. In Revelation 2:9, it says, I know your afflictions. The word afflictions does not describe the ordinary troubles of life, but rather it refers to what we might call catastrophic pressure. In another context in the scriptures, this word was used to describe a man being crushed by a massive boulder. So you see, it's not talking about the little, I chipped a fingernail or I lost my sock. This is talking about actual troubles in life. When the sky falls around us, when all hope is lost, when darkness surrounds us and the enemy closes in, Jesus says, I know your afflictions. He also reminds us that he knows our poverty. He says in verse 9, I know your poverty, yet you are rich. These words are literal and not metaphorical. Christians in Smyrna evidently came from the lower rungs of economic ladder. If they had once been rich in worldly goods, those days were long past. No doubt many had lost their jobs in the trade guilds because they would not say Caesar is Lord. To these poverty-stricken Christians, Christ says, but you are rich. Do you think he's mocking them? I suppose it depends on how we value time versus eternity. If this life is all that matters, then the words of Jesus are nothing more than pious nonsense. Because what good does it do to say you are rich to people that are starving? But if you call yourself a Christian and believe that one day soon Jesus is coming to take you home, then then you are rich, no matter what your station in life. Jesus also says he knows our enemies. In verse 2, or chapter 2 and verse 9, he says, I know about the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Who are these people who are called a synagogue of Satan? This fearful description applies to those Jews in Smyrna who had joined forces with the pagans to accuse the Christians of treason against Rome. In taking sides against the Church of Jesus, they were taking sides against the Lord himself. Because Christians did not worship idols, but instead worship God who is visible, they were sometimes considered atheists. Never be surprised when a religious people begin to hate you. They hated Jesus too. And it was religious people who put our Savior on the cross to be crucified. This same scenario will be played out again right before the Lord's return. In Great Controversy, page 550, it says, the people of God will not be free from suffering, but while persecution and distress, while they endure privation and suffer for want of food, they will not be left to perish. That God who cared for Elijah will not pass by one of his sacrificing children. He who numbers the hairs of their head will care for them, and in a time of famine, they shall be satisfied. She says, while the wicked are dying from hunger and pestilence, angels will shield the righteous and supply their wants. To him that walketh righteously is the promise, bread shall be given, his water shall be sure. When the poor and needy seek water and there is none, and their tongue faileth for thirst, I, the Lord, will hear. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. Yet to human sight it will appear that the people of God must soon seal their testimony with their blood, as did the martyrs before them. They themselves began to fear that the Lord had left them to fall by the hand of their enemies. It is a time of fearful agony. Day and night they cry unto God for deliverance. The wicked exult, and the jeering cry is heard. Where now is your faith? Why does not God deliver you out of our hands if you are indeed his people? But the waiting ones remember Jesus dying upon Calvary's cross and the chief priests and rulers shouting in mockery. He saved others, himself he cannot save. If he be the King of Israel, let him come down from the cross and we will believe him. It says that like Jacob, all are wrestling with God. Their countenance express their internal struggle. Paleness sits upon every face, yet they cease not their earnest intercession. So this same, I guess you would call it, persecution that the enemies are going through here in the day of Smyrna is going to repeat itself at the end of time. Jesus also says, do not fear. Do not be afraid of what you are about to suffer. I tell you, the devil will put some of you in prison to test you, and you will suffer persecution for 10 days. Revelation 2:10. But we can find a great deal of instruction in this verse. First, the Lord has perfect knowledge of all that is about to happen to us. What surprises us does not surprise him. Secondly, the Lord sometimes allows the devil to attack us severely. Can any of you testify to that? At least it seems severe, doesn't it? Maybe it's not like Job, but if our Christian walk is easy and carefree, we might want to check what direction we're headed. And thirdly, the Lord limits our suffering. Jesus tells the church that the severe persecution will last 10 days. Now, some of us might think that doesn't sound so bad. But how will you feel after you have been fired from your job, beaten senseless, your house plundered, your spouse abused, and your children physically attacked? Will 10 days seem too small to you then? I cannot explain why some people seem to suffer more than others. While it is true that into each life some rain must fall, some folks seem to have a perpetual monsoon pouring down on them all the time. After thinking about this for many years, I've concluded that all our speculations are just that, idle speculations, and it doesn't help us much to consider the matter. But rest on this, we cannot be tempted beyond that which we are able to bear, according to 1 Corinthians 10:12. Think of it this way, if Jesus says you will suffer for 10 days, no force on earth can make your suffering last 11 days. Doesn't that sound good? Sounds real encouraging. It won't end early, but it won't linger either. The Lord has determined the time limit of your trials, whether it be for 10 days, 10 weeks, 10 months, 10 years, maybe 10 decades. But he also says, fear not. The Lord knows what he's doing, and he's doing it. He will accomplish his purpose concerning each one of us. Jesus also tells us to be faithful. In Revelation 2 and verses 10 and 11, he says, be faithful even to the point of death, and I will give you a crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes will not be hurt at all by the second death. This is one point that we don't want to miss. Jesus never promises to remove the trials of life. He never says to the church in Smyrna, just believe in me and everything will get better. Jesus was not a prosperity gospel preacher. That heresy has infected the church around the world and created a generation of Christians who are materialistic, worldly, and spiritually anemic. Because they have no theology of suffering, they are not ready when suffering comes. So they have no strength to face the terrible struggles in their life. Jesus never says, believe in me, and I will give you an easy life. He says, be faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. No doubt many of the believers in Smyrna paid the ultimate price for their faith. Having followed Jesus in life, they now wait for him in death. It is against that backdrop that we see the importance of Christ's title for himself in Revelation 2 and verse 8. He says, these are the words of him who is the first and the last, who died and came to life again. These are the extremes. Jesus says in John 11:25, death itself has no power over the believer who remains faithful. We may die. Indeed, we will die someday. That's not the question. Will we be faithful no matter what? That's the question. Jesus says, fear not, be faithful. Death may come, but it cannot take from us what God has promised. The world gives fame, and the world takes away fame. So be it. We are rich today, and we're poor tomorrow. We have a job, and then we don't have a job. We are healthy, and then cancer strikes. Sorry. We seem to have a happy family, and then it falls apart. Our friends say they love us, and then they disappear. To those who stand strong in the midst of these trials, the best is yet to come. Jesus says that we have a crown of life waiting, waiting for us. Be encouraged, child of God. Put your helmet back on and get back in the game. Don't run from the troubles of life. You're richer than you think. Jesus is coming soon, and he knows your troubles. He knows your poverty, and he knows your enemies. And Jesus says, do not fear, be faithful, and I will give you a crown of life. Are you willing this morning to be faithful to the Lord? There's still time. I want to read a, if I can. I knew I should have left that part about cancer off. Well, as soon as I find it, I thought I had it marked. Here it is. It says, one day a dream. This is a poem someone wrote, Pilgrim Gospel Messenger. It says, one day as I was fast asleep, I had this stirring dream. I was caught up to be with God, with angels, it did seem. And while up there, I met God's saints from many parts of the earth. Now some were great and famous men, and some of humble birth. I talked to one great saint of God, the first one I had met. He told me how he died for Christ, his words I can't forget. He lived, he said, in Bible times, and died at Nero's stake. It was a joy to give my all and burn for Jesus' sake. He says, I was so glad to die for Christ with humble words, he said, but as I listened to it all, I bowed my guilty head. Another man then gently spoke, here's my story, friend. 'Twas cannibals that took my life because I would not bend. I tried, Sheila hates this word. I tried to tell those heathen souls, of course, who came to, that Christ had come to die. They ate my flesh and drank my blood, but sent me my soul on high. Of course, up here are millions more with stories rare and true. But friend, before I tell you more, let's hear your story too. He says, I am ashamed of how I've failed. I've known no sacrifice. I am ashamed of how I fell. I paid such little price. I've never even given funds to send the gospel out. I've lived a life of luxury and never done without. Those costly cars, those extra clothes, so needless now and vain. The very thought of how I live now fills my heart with pain. Just then it seemed that Jesus said, take up my cross today. and I will give you another chance to work and give and pray. My guilty heart began to burn, my nervous body shake, and then I woke with tear-filled eyes. With new resolves to make. I told the Lord from that day forth, my best, my all I'll give to win the lost in every place. For this alone I'd live. I told the Lord that from then on I would not waste a dime, that I would give myself to prayer and really use my time, that I would seek with all my heart that power from above to help me tell a heathen world of Jesus' grace and love. Well, Joshua said in 24:15, choose you this day. I'm asking you to do the same thing.